Welcome back to the How to Become a Doctor podcast. I'm Kira, a fourth year medical student at the University of Birmingham.
And I'm Lucy, a third year medical student at the University of Cambridge. On this podcast, we bring you all the information we wish we knew when applying to medicine through interviewing inspiring guests in the healthcare world, talking to organisations, including the King's Fund and the GMC, and sharing our experiences as mentors and mock interviewers.
No contacts in the medical field? No problem, because in our Specialty Spotlight series, we are giving you guys a front row seat to interviews with doctors working in all of the different medical specialties. We find out what their day job is really like, their top tips for aspiring and current medical students, and what they would tell their younger self.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at How to Become a Doctor with Doctor Spelled DR to keep up to date with everything we're doing. So, without further ado, let's jump straight into today's Specialty Spotlight.
So hi everyone, today we've got Dr. Berrier here. Without further ado, would you be able to introduce yourself, Dr. Berrier, and tell everyone a little bit about who you are? And then that might give them some context as to what on earth we're going to talk about in this little clip.
So hi everyone, my name's Lauren James. I am a junior doctor. I'm currently an F2 on maternity leave. I'm a graduate entry medical student and I have two children, one of whom was born before I went to medical school. He was 17 months old. And one of whom has been born during my medical training. I'm currently applying to be a surgeon, so I'm hoping to start training to be a surgeon next summer. So I'm not sure when you're watching this, but that's about 8 months from now, something like that.
Fantastic. And I do follow you on Instagram. So I guess, what's your Instagram handle, just in case people are thinking, oh, I might recognise this lady from somewhere?
So it's the surgical doctor. So I'm always happy to take questions anyone has on there.
Amazing. And so the theme of today has been obstetrics and gynecology, and we've been following a lady from when she's first had a baby to she's going to deliver today. And we wanted to really touch on, what if this lady was in the medical profession? What if she was per se a doctor? How would motherhood and medicine mix? Can they mix? So without further ado, would you be able to talk about whether the idea of motherhood has impacted your career decisions at all?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think today, you know, with the way we parent, it's not just motherhood, but fatherhood as well. Because, you know, I do know someone who, I know quite a few fathers that have had children during medical school and mothers too. And a topic which is really important because a lot of people sometimes go through medical school and they end up having a baby halfway through medical school. That's not my experience, but it seems to be more and more common. And it is something that the medical schools are on board with these days. So it is becoming something that is much more common than it would have been 10, 15 years ago. So one of the reasons I wanted to be a doctor was to inspire my son, basically. I wanted to provide a great life for him. I wanted for him to see a person who enjoys getting up and going to work. And for me, before I went to medical school, that thing that I was so passionate about was being a doctor. I didn't want him to see me going to work and kind of dreading the alarm, dreading, you know, Sunday evening. I wanted to see a person who's striving to achieve something, who's passionate about something. And for me, that was medicine. So being a mother definitely has spurred me on towards, you know, working as a doctor, getting into medical school, which wasn't easy for me at all. It took me quite a few years to pass the GAMSAT, which is the examination you take to be a graduate medic. I kind of stuck with it, you know, for myself, of course, but also for him too. In terms of kind of how it's affected me through medical school, there's no doubt that it's difficult because for everyone else, their main focus is getting through medical school. And for you, you have this, your main focus, medical school comes second. So how I would define my experience, kind of balancing this wonderful passion and desire to succeed that I had with the complications of being a mother, which there are many. But it was fine. I got through it. I enjoyed it. You know, I found the first 18 months difficult, but I wouldn't say I struggled particularly through medical school. And actually, I think I would argue that I am a better medical student and a better doctor for being a mother, because you never know when you're going to drop the ball because they're going to be ill or, you know, so you have to be ahead of the curve at every point. Because, you know, you can't afford to miss a session and sleep in because perhaps, you know, baby's ill next week and then you're going to have to miss a week. You just can't afford to. So what happened was that it made me incredibly effective as a student. And this isn't just limited to people who are mothers. This is, you know, people have other jobs, they have caring responsibilities. And my tip for all of those people is you have to kind of be a little bit ahead of the curve. You have to be the one who's always done the work. You have to be the one who's always done the reading, because there's this other thing in your life which has got a demand on your time effectively. So in some ways, it has made life harder for me in many, many ways. But actually being a mother has made me, I think, a more efficient doctor and a more effective doctor and medical student.
That's amazing. And it's so nice to hear you talk about the positives, because maybe I'm just a pessimistic person, but when I think of all the problems first without the thought, and then think about all the good stuff that could come later on. And then because I think of the problems first, I'm like, let's not consider it. But it's nice to hear, it sounds like your mindset is very much, there are great things that come of it, and then there are challenges, but I'll make them work because of the great things.
Yeah, I mean, the challenges are day-to-day things, like, you know, being a parent is a drain on mental energy. So it's hard work being a parent. And there's always a sense of guilt for mothers as well, and for fathers, because you think, you know, my child's growing every second, and here I am sitting at a computer revising, when actually, I, you know, maybe I'm missing these moments. And there's that sense of guilt, I think, which creates a drain on mental energy. And obviously also, you know, there's resources that you need. You know, it's financially expensive to be a medic parent, and there's the time. I used to work so many hours. I never had any time for myself. But these are day-to-day things. And once mm-hmm. you come a few years beyond that, what you are left with is the legacy, which is actually that it was a really great learning curve. And actually, I do think it has made me more effectively.
Amazing. So now you've graduated and you've done a couple of years working. Did you find it different, medical student parent to doctor parent?
I generally find being a doctor easier than being a medical student. I see how you reacted to that. I think
reassuring.
Yeah. So everyone says to you things like, when you're a med student, they say things to you like, oh, the hard work hasn't begun yet. And I just don't think it's true. I think when you're at med school, there's always, you know, there's the threat that you might have to resit a year, or, you know, all of that stuff. Once you graduate, yes, the hours are hard. You have all of the things of, you know, you've got to make sure you're safe and you're not killing anyone. You know, there's always that worry that I might do something wrong and I might get sued. Mm-hmm. But actually, that's a very small part of the job. And as long as you're safe, you can manage that risk. So I have actually found the whole experience easier since graduating. You are going to work long hours sometimes, and that is difficult as a mother because your time is not your own. So my time does not belong to me. My time belongs to my children. My time belongs to my son. So if I worked a couple of really long weeks, like 72 hour weeks in the middle of winter in my F1 year, and I really felt like I was just never leaving the hospital. And that is the only time over foundation I've ever worked really long hours, because I think that I've worked for a full-time job, I think it's been totally fine. But there was like a set of 3 weeks in F1 where I was just never left hospital. And that was quite stressful because, like I said, my time does not belong to me. And I think my son it's him that this is hurting, really, because I don't mind being at work too much because I enjoy the job. So there is that sense of stress, which you don't have as a medical student, because as a med student, you're kind of 9 to 5. And if you're working, you're working at home. So if there's a birthday party or something, you can work around it. Being a doctor is much less flexible, obviously. But there are exams that you need to take as a doctor. It's not ideal if you fail them, because you need to pass them and they're expensive. But ultimately, if you do fail, you just resit it. Whereas kind of if you're at med school, you need to pass those exams. So I would actually say being a doctor is easier than being a med student, just my opinion. So there are the kind of things that's changed. And but you get paid also, you know, I'm being paid now. So, you know, I might have one set of, you know, horrible weeks in a month in January, but actually at least I can take him on holiday now. So there is that.
I can't wait to start getting paid, especially in fourth year. I'm like, I'm nearly there, thank God. Yeah. In terms of your kind of shifts, is there any leniencies towards parents or any exceptions, or is it still the kind of the case of just rota swapping and trying to find nice people who will swap with you if you have something on? Because I guess you might have more family occasions to do if your family is inherently larger.
Yeah, so as a general rule, I would say my foundation rota has been completely fine in terms of working hours. There are things like nativity plays, which will be in the middle of the day. I have, touch wood, I have never had a problem going to anything of my son's to this point. I've been to every parents' evening, I've been to every nativity, I've been to every Easter ceremony thing, you know, all these things that they do in the middle of the day that they expect you to go to. I've never missed a single one. And that's, it can be difficult to get time off. In fact, it's incredibly difficult to get time off. But I've just been able to book the, I mean, they send those dates out at the start of the year, and then I've been able to book them off at the start of every placement. It is difficult to get time off things like family holidays, and that is a bit of a problem and a bit of worry. I want to go to Florida next year, and I'm just terrified to book it because we rotate every 4 months, and your rota coordinator is different every 4 months. Unlike with normal jobs, no one knows you. They're not invested in keeping you because you're only with them for 4 months. So you also don't have any time to earn any goodwill. You're just a name on a rota. So in a normal job, you could be like, you know, hi, Janet, it's me again. You know, I'd like to book off, you know, Feb 2021 or 22. And they'll be like, yeah, don't worry. But because you're only able to really request things 4 months in advance, it can be quite difficult and quite stressful, actually. My sister's getting married next summer, and I have already sent an email to the rota coordinator, but, you know, to make a note of this, but she said kind of contact me again in April and hopefully we can sort something out. So it's never a set. No one's ever like, okay, that's fine, I'll have to wait until April and then hope. You can do things like rota swaps, like you mentioned. I've never done this just because it's always been such a pain in the bum in terms of how you can arrange your working days. So I have worked full time up until this point. So my kind of structure has always kind of been that for my foundation training, I just have to work around work as best I can. And just, you know, my time is at work, and then, you know, just kind of go from there. I am going back less than full time because I'm on maternity leave at the moment. So to begin with, I'm going back at 50%. And then once I go on to surgery, that will go back up again. And the way that works is that you choose your named off days. So this will probably be a thing for many people who aren't thinking about it at the start of medical school, but perhaps at some point during your career, you might want to lose a day. So basically, you just pick a day of the week that you don't want to work, say a Friday. This is how they told me it works anyway. I've not done it yet. And then they will only rota you on the other 6 days. So that's what I'm going to do initially when I get back in February.
Amazing. I think it's so helpful talking about this stuff because I find on placement, I don't know, there's never really a time or a place to talk about life outside of medicine. If there's a spare minutes in the coffee room, it's like teaching or it's talking about this principal or preparing for the next case that's coming in. And there's not actually that much talk about life outside of it. So as far as I'm aware, these people are just live, breathe, eat medicine. So, and I know quite a lot of them will have families, but they just don't talk about them. Do you think that's, has that been your experience too? People just not really talking about personal lives at work?
Yeah, and I think medical education needs to reflect the changing face of medicine as well. See, the medical education that we receive is based on, you know, years previous where, you know, there would have been so many kind of doctor residences next to the hospital, and you've worked 100 hours, you would have lived next to the hospital and popped in whenever there was a case that you found interesting. And the expectation was very much that medicine was your life. And that is not the case anymore for men as well as women. And it's not just about having children. It's about, you know, people who are coming through medical school now, they want fantastic jobs. They want an interesting job, but they also want to live life as well. You know, some of my colleagues who don't have children, it's really important for their physical and mental health to go to the gym every day. Or, you know, there is a famous story that went around our medical school when we did our GP placement about a GP who worked 4 days a week because he liked to go skiing in Switzerland or somewhere every weekend. You know, so people want to have these portfolio careers and portfolio lives, and it's not really talked about. And I think it does cause an anxiety for young medical students who think, you know, I don't want a family right now, but at some point in my late 20s, early 30s, you know, late 30s, whenever, I'm going to maybe want to take a step back from this. And is that okay? And I think often the answer that you get is no, because it's difficult, but actually things are changing. And we need to make sure that people know when you want to take this step, that there is support there for you. And it doesn't mean that you're a part-time doctor effectively. I think that's why it's called less than full-time, not part-time, because you know, and it's really flexible as well. You can do 90%, 80%, 70%, 60%, 50%. So you will find trainees that for a variety of reasons choose to do medicine less than full time, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned you're interested in surgery and you're pursuing a surgical career. And I think from all of the kind of myths and stuff that I hear on the regular placement, surgery has got a particular rep for, if you want to do surgery, you have to be this kind of type A person, no distractions. You literally work. You can't take any time to step off this conveyor belt because you need to be in the theatre, like training your skills. How have you found that kind of, well, I don't know, like idea and balancing that with your life?
It is difficult. There was that moment when I realized I wanted to do surgery was kind of an oh no moment because of all of those things. Surgery is a lot of work. So even the application process, you know, one of my friends applied for IMT 2 years ago. He had no portfolio whatsoever, just cobbled a few things together last moment, you know, got a job. And that was that. Whereas, you know, for surgery as a foundation doctor, you're really going to be preparing for this throughout medical school and into foundation. So there is always going to be more work for those that want to do surgery. And that is true, I think, throughout the process. And I think also some specialities are a bit more open to people kind of dipping in and out. But if that's what you want to do, why should you not do that? And actually, I think, I mean, I haven't got a study to give you at the moment, but I'll have to see if I can find one. But actually, burnout is a really big problem. It's a patient safety issue, and it's an NHS resources issue. What we want is trainees who are happy and who are not burned out. And, you know, especially on surgery with really high rates of burnout, if that means that we need to have more people who are less than full time, but are, you know, fresh and passionate and enthusiastic at work, and that is a better thing for the speciality, isn't it? And I think that is the view that is kind of working its way upward at the moment. And that will continue to be the case as we kind of have these conversations and as we move forward. So, I mean, I do feel like I have a lot of plates spinning in the air. I mean, as you can tell, I'm on maternity leave. I should be doing nothing, but, you know, I'm doing medic mentor, I'm revising for MRCS, I'm doing all of these kind of things. And that's because I have to, really. There isn't really an option. I can't do MRCS. I can't think about publishing because if I want to apply to surgery, I need to have these sort of strings to my bow. But I enjoy working. So for me, it's not a huge problem. You might need to be kind of like, you know, really enjoying going and trying to get publication or talking to people about I love medicine. Medicine is, you can probably tell, like I'm so passionate about what we do. I think it's such a privilege. It's so amazing. So for me, it doesn't feel like I'm working all the time. But yeah, I have to say, there's not a lot else that I do outside of medicine in all its forms. And that is kind of that is surgery for you. But that's how it should be, because, you have someone's life in your hands, effectively. So it should be hard. It's supposed to be hard.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And then the final kind of thing I wanted to touch on is being a medical student, kind of, what's that called? The syndrome where they diagnose themselves with everything they're learning. There's a name for it. I can't remember. But I dread to think what I'd be like as a pregnant woman and delivering, having gone through obs and gyne training and things like that. How did you find that your medical experience affected your pregnancy and delivery? And it's quite interesting because you had a child before med school and a child after, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It is interesting, actually, because I was much more anxious with the second, I think, because of what I know. So when I had my first baby, I just kind of floated through the process because I wasn't a medic. But with my second, I diagnosed so many things. Like, there are rare conditions like amniotic embolism, have you heard of that, where a bit of the amniotic fluid gets into the systemic circulation and can cause, you know, it acts like an embolus effectively. It's incredibly dangerous, but also incredibly rare. It basically never happens. So I got pregnant and I was worried about that. When I got to my 20-week scan, unfortunately, my little girl had a very small head, so she was less than the third centile. So I was sort of diagnosing that as her having microcephaly, which is effectively where the head is so small, it's not formed properly, then she might not have a brain. So we kind of got to 20 weeks, which is really far along, actually. You're really attached to your baby at that point. And I was thinking, you know, is what's going to happen? Is my baby not going to live because she's got this really serious symptom, not symptom, but a disease of effect, what, pathology, I think is the word I'm looking for. And that was a really difficult moment. And I think had I not been a doctor, that would never have even occurred to me. So I sort of, you know, I was in there and, you know, the sonographer was very quiet. And because I'm medically trained, you know, I'm thinking this is not how this is supposed to go. And, you know, they did get me in to see a consultant. And I actually think they managed my anxieties as a doctor quite well, because I think they knew that for everything that they said, I was going along to this and this and this. But on the other hand, my baby was born during lockdown. I had to obviously go in alone, and I was induced alone. I was, you know, having very serious contractions 3 times in 10 minutes for 8 hours on my own, where, you know, I saw a midwife twice. And, you know, just the process of being induced is incredibly frightening. But because I am a doctor, I understand the process of being induced. I understand the, you know, the reasons behind it. So in some ways that actually provided me with a sense of ease almost that perhaps your medically trained woman wouldn't have, you know, because I have been an obs and gynae doctor. I've done that job for 4 months. So I knew my way around that. And as a lockdown skill, that was good for a lockdown pregnancy. But yeah, I do think it leads you to go down dark alleyways in terms of diagnosing yourself. And certainly when I was a medical student, you know, every time we did something, I think I had some sort of rare syndrome, you know, all these vague symptoms like general loss of appetite, or, you know, all of these things you think, oh my gosh, have I got this? But that is because that is what we are trained to do. You know, the mind, as you train to be a medical student, you know, you kind of train your mind to hear a symptom like nausea or like loss of weight, and your mind should spark off down all of these different, you know, possibilities for what could be happening to your patient. That is the essence of what we do as medics. So it's natural that, you know, when you experience a symptom, that your mind is going to go off down those same pathways. And I think that we need to be careful of that. I will also say that treating doctors is a nightmare. I am always very anxious whenever my patient is a doctor, especially as a very junior doctor, because if your patient's a consultant anaesthetist and you're trying to cannulate that patient, it makes you nervous. And then I think you do worse. Like I, you know, before I went off, I was like the queen of cannulas. I can get a cannula into anyone, you know, but when your patient is, or, you know, the patient says, oh, my husband's here, he's a consultant anaesthetist, and you're kind of like, God, please, no, anyone but me. Or, you know, sometimes there is, I think, a patient safety issue with treating doctors, because I think sometimes we allow, as a medical team, when your patient is a doctor, you allow them to give a medical opinion as to their own condition. And there's an ethical consideration there as to whether that's appropriate, because they are not an objective, well, no one's ever objective, but they are not an objective member of that team. So you do have to be careful when family members and patients are doctors as well, when you are the practicing team, which is an interesting area to think about as well, I think.
Yeah, I've never had any experience or encountered that on placement, but I can imagine it wouldn't be the easiest thing to do.
No, and they will always tell you as well, you will never see a patient who's a doctor and you don't know it. Someone will always say, oh, my son's a doctor, he'll be here in a minute. And you think, oh, yeah, oh, great, you know. Brilliant. I'm going to mess up.
Gosh. I've only seen it when they've handed over a phone. It's been like hitting in the past. The phone is passed around all the different relatives. And yeah, it's the doctor from another country that's trying to... It's nice that they're obviously interested in care. But yeah, it sometimes is a bit much for the team. And then finally, I guess, how did you find working whilst pregnant? Because... like you were saying, the shifts can be long a lot of the time, especially in the foundation years, you're on your feet a lot of the day. How did you find that?
Because I had premises, for those of you that don't know, that's the sickness you get during pregnancy where you have really, I was being sick kind of, you know, 6-7 times a day. It was just nauseous all the time, which made it really difficult to work at all. I used to be on the ward, and between seeing patients, I'd have to go and, you know, go and be sick effectively. And I was like that for about 6 months. which was incredibly draining and incredibly difficult. And because I was working on obstetrics and gynaecology at the time, there were lots of patients who had hyperemesis who'd been brought in and were being treated. And, you know, they would say, oh, you know, I've been signed off work for, you know, 4 weeks. And my GP was saying, you need to be signed off. And I was sort of thinking, you know, I was safe to work, but it was costing me a lot in terms of mental energy and getting through the day. It was really, really draining, quite problematic for me. So I decided not to be signed off and to carry on and to kind of take the antiemetics. But actually, that's one of the things about being a doctor is it's not always easy for you to take time off. And actually, my supervisor did say to me that I should consider a career not in surgery because surgeons don't take time off. I think I had about 6 days off in total with the hyperemesis. And that is some of the things that occasionally you can encounter. But the majority of consultants are not like that at all. Every now and again, you come across one and you just have to kind of have a shield up, like, you know, I'm genuinely really ill and I feel like I'm not taking any time off. But yeah, you sort of have to weigh up as long as you're, because it's always a patient safety issue. So if you're really not well, you can't go in. But if you feel you're well enough to go in, then you definitely should. And I did. And that's part of being in training, I suppose.
Yeah, I think from speaking to people at the moment, they've said there's been a massive shift in the attitude of staff sickness with COVID, because if you go in with COVID, you're going to infect everyone and then you're in deep trouble. Whereas beforehand, if you had a cough or a cold, they were saying they would just go in and soldier on. Whereas now they're really careful. So maybe COVID will do some good in terms of staff sickness. And I guess I think sometimes resilience can be toxic and there's only so much resilience you can be expected to have before it's actually negative for yourself and everyone around you.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of pregnancy, there are, I'm not sure if it's a general rule, but certainly in our trust, once you get beyond a certain point, you're taken off nights. So I can't remember when that was, because I switched to a non-nights job as my middle job. So I kind of finished my nights when I was about 20 weeks, something like that. And then I didn't do any nights. I haven't done any nights since, effectively. But once you get so far along, there are things in place that should support you.
Amazing. So I think we've covered an awful lot in this chat. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that we should touch on before we finish up?
No, not at all. I think just to say that, you know, you really can and should make medicine whatever you want it to be. As long as you're hardworking, you're willing to put in the hours and you're dedicated to what you want to do, I don't see why there's any reason why we can't build the lives that we want around a fascinating career. As long as, you know, patient safety is always number one and our well-being is always, you know, cared for, I think we can actually make a generation of much safer, much happier, much well-rounded doctors. And that starts by, you know, signposting and saying, you know, we can do it and we will do it. And, you know, hopefully one day, you know, for all the students that are coming through med school, think about starting med school now, by the time you get there, I will be, I don't know, registrar and above, working towards consultancy. I will hopefully be your, maybe I'll be your consultant. And you can see how I feel. And certainly in my peer group, this is how most of us feel. So, you know, occasionally, you know, you might meet someone who doesn't feel like that, but we are gradually moving up anyway. So it's all to play for.
Yeah, genuinely, when people say, oh, I don't want to do medicine because it looks like this at the moment. And I just think, actually, you know, if there is an issue, surely it actually makes me want to get into it and do something about it. Because if everyone shies away from it because it's a problem, then it's never going to get fixed. And I think have the attitude that, you know, it might be like this now, but trust me, there are people working to change it and make it a more positive, constructive workplace. And actually, the more people that help, the better. So please do come join us and help us.
Yeah, and the majority are wonderful anyway. You only occasionally get these. There's just the occasional one as well. It's not even worth worrying about.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want more, be sure to check out all of our previous episodes, ranging from our highly popular Open Pods, UCAT, BMAT, and Into Your Advice, and even more.
Make sure you're following us on Instagram at How to Become a Doctor with Doctor spelt DR for more, and be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice so you never miss an episode. See you next time.
Bye.